Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to the Long Talk here on New Zealand Sports Radio. I have two for the price of one today. Not just one person, but two people. I've got Sam Marsh and Henry Lawton joining me, who both from Victory Up. Yes, we're going to be talking esports today. So, welcome, gentlemen. How are you doing? One of you can talk.
I was waiting for Henry to go first.
I was looking at Sam's video. Yeah. Are you going to say anything? I'm doing very well, thank you. Yourself?
So guys, look, we've had lockdown and running a sports station or and trying to produce sports content has been kind of interesting and fun for the past 3 months or so. But for you guys, I guess it's been still been go 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 with esports because you guys can do a lot of it online.
COVID's definitely I guess pushed the envelope, made it happen a lot faster than what people were expecting. It's always been in the pipeline for us. It's just I guess COVID sort of put it at the forefront when traditional sports started dying down in terms of viewership that was available.
Yeah, absolutely, we've seen that. It's been sort of growing. It's been interesting how to see different types of esports around things like Zwift, which is kind of recreating cycling on there. We've got the recreating things like your racing simulation games, and then you've got your things that aren't hopefully recreating, which are like your shoot 'em ups and your strategy games, which are much more fantasy like. But before we get talking about all of those kind of things, Henry, let's kick off with you. What is your first ever gaming memory?
Paperboy, Commodore 64.
Wow, that's. Sam, are you a Commodore guy or was that Spectrum?
I guess it was the only thing available at the time. And I must say that I don't think I made it past 25 meters in the game when I first started playing it, nor did I understand the concept.
You're more about throwing things and breaking them rather than actually delivering the papers.
Yes, exactly.
I used to play that game in an arcade down by the seafront where we used to have our computer arcades. Sam, your first gaming memory?
Ooh, Age of Empires, the first one on PC.
That's sophisticated. There's me thinking of the two-screen console with Donkey Kong was how I started. And you're talking about starting with Age of Empires. Jeez, that's sophisticated gaming. Not your ball bouncing or your or playing solitaire, but you go full strategy. Wow.
Yeah, no, I was sort of raised around that time. Age of Empires was quite big back in the day, in my day. And just sort of playing that on my parents' computer. We were quite fortunate to have a computer decent enough to be able to run that at the time, which is now nothing. It was quite good memories of that, actually.
So played all through your teenage years and always kept playing and moved online and different things. Have either of you ever actually competed and been an esports athlete?
Poor, yeah, a long time ago. Did Halo, a little bit competitive, but apart from that, not really. I think Henry's a bit more of a pro than me.
I highly doubt that. competitively, yes, but not in the pro scene. I guess that's what led my interest into this space was the lack of opportunities available.
So what kind of Sam there has mentioned Halo, also that's a first person shooter. What kind of competitive did you which platforms did you compete on get into?
Yeah, so I pretty much console gaming has been my upbringing through I guess video games, and it's always been traditional sports because that's what I was into. You know, I played rugby, so we played the rugby game. You know, greatest rugby game ever made was Rugby 08.
Controversial. What?
Yeah. Wow. That stemmed onto other passions where
No. Sorry, we can't go past that. We're gonna go claiming that Rugby 08 is the greatest rugby game ever.
The greatest roster at the time too.
Not Lomu's, not John Lomu's one?
You know, there's I guess that was the breakout market for rugby.
Yep.
Definitely was it. Lomu was, you know, and he still is the goat of rugby, in my opinion. But Rugby 08 changed the game, for sure. Lomu, once you knew how to play it, there was no way of beating you. You know, there were a lot of in-game glitches that you could exploit.
Wow. I run a rugby podcast, hence you can see the rugby is behind me, driving more of my brand on there. And I know a couple of guys who have rugby gaming YouTube channels, and they're like, yeah, John Lomu was always the one. And they say, look, yeah, we've never had a game as good as that since. Controversial opinions early doors.
I will stand by that.
But for both of you, as you say, you didn't do it professionally. The same as with you, Sam. You neither of you actually your careers haven't come up through the gaming space, have they? Really, neither of you actually ever. This is your first venture, your first time sort of earning money, kind of as in this space. Sam, I see you have sales background, working in Harvey Norman. So electronics, at least that's kind of near esports, got the same letter. But then, is that how you had your home set up? Was to get things that get company discounts?
I mean, that was one of the benefits of working there at the time. But no, I mean, it sort of started before that, like really getting into gaming. But then sort of working at Harvey Norman, just it sort of steered me towards that. And I ended up being quite good at sort of being a salesperson anyway. I mean, it was just sort of an enabler, if anything, to be quite honest. It helped me buy games for cheap. It helped me in my research and finding, you know, components for PCs and bits and pieces for the cheapest prices. So, and yeah, we were able to order those through work, which was quite nice.
You then took a massive detour, let's be blunt, for the next 4 or 5 years, starting off as a dead officer, then working in the New Zealand Defence Force. Again, roles, though, that involve dealing with people quite a lot as well. It seems to be a common theme through there.
Yeah. I mean, it's... customer service is probably my main background, engagement. And yeah, it's just been really fun sort of getting to know people, talk to people. That's where I excel at. So yeah, it's all about the people, in my opinion, the customer.
So you've got the vetting analysis, but then this is a the key one that I've got to ask you about. But you had some time overseas in England, or in the UK, sorry, for just under a year with the royal household. You working for Her Majesty the Queen. How was did you get to meet her?
Yeah. No, I met her on a couple of occasions. That was just as their security advisor for the household. It was an interesting time, very different to a standard business or even the government in New Zealand. Couldn't get away with much over there, unfortunately. but they liked to drink, so I was not opposed to that. Going out on a Thursday night for a couple of drinks after work was the standard practice. And yeah, so that was good. Met some really great people over there who I'm still friends with to this day. And yeah, of course, met all the royals, went out and worked at most of the royal grounds. I was mostly based at Buckingham Palace, which was interesting. But yeah, had to sort of come to realize what my passion was in life, which wasn't really working overseas for the royal family, unfortunately.
Well, he wasn't taking a bullet for the Queen. Okay, as an access control guy, you guys must have played the kind of okay, guys, if we were to be Ocean's 11, how would we break into the Buckingham Palace? Did you play those sort of scenarios?
I can't really tell you, but yes. Kind of.
I wasn't asking details as to how you'd break in. Just did you guys have fun? Kind of going, okay, if we were to do it, folks, we would have the busty blonde would distract Jim over there, who would be guarding that door, and we'd all sneak in behind her and do XYZ to do the alarms. But you did play all those sort of fun games.
We did have those sort of scenarios running in our head. Yeah.
Yeah.
It helped pass the time.
And then you came back here, and but I think we're going to switch over and have a chat with Henry about his journey, because very different to Sam, as you said, sales orientated, very people orientated, and got involved in the Defence Force. We chatted pre-show, and yours was very different. You said you kind of rugby was all you were interested in at school. Realised that wasn't going to ever become a kind of a career per se, so dropped out and became a butcher's apprentice. I mean, that's a very different a kind of journey in your career.
Yeah, I guess, you know, rugby being the passion growing up, and don't get me wrong, there was a lot of opportunities thrown at me to perform at a higher level. As a kid, as a teenager, my head wasn't screwed on in those areas, and I didn't realise those opportunities. A lot of regret and stuff like that, but wouldn't change it for the world, what I've been through in life in terms of careers. Took me into my mid-20s to find what my niche was and what I wanted to do with my life. And, come a long way from the butcher and then the railway worker.
I'm in my mid 40s and stuff.
The road worker.
You a butcher's apprentice. Then, as you say, you got involved. On the sort of construction side of things. Worked on roads. You mentioned about we talked pretty thing about you heading over to Australia and having some time over there, working in the on the rails and at the airports. So traffic and travel, or managing of travel. Travel and infrastructure has been a big thing of yours.
Strange. It becomes a forced upon passion. It's not something I set out to do. It wasn't something I was going, yeah, I'm going to go build some roads. I'm going to go look after the roads. It sort of just got forced on me. And when I went, oh, I'm actually good at doing this. What's the next step? What else can I do to improve on this and help my career growth? It's a very strange story, to be honest.
So the thing for me is looking at this where you've worked in these sort of things, is a lot of it comes down to a lot of infrastructure things come down to basic problem solving. right, and going, okay, how do we fix this? And if I look at the kind of the roles, as you said, once you got into what your kind of your career, is everything along that line has been about solving, here's a problem, how do we solve it, folks? Which people do we get in? How do we manage that piece, traffic flow, whilst we're digging up this, or how do we manage that while we're doing that? And it's figuring out multiple things to make sure they all flow and they all work from looking at it from the outside. Is that fair?
And I guess my most recent role, which I've left, pretty much explains that all. You know, we had around my past role, 1,000 to 1,200 jobs on the road at any given time, and it was my duty to make sure that the traffic kept flowing.
Okay, so why do you dig up the roads to put electricity in, and you don't put fibre in at the same time?
Oh, you'll have to ask the utility companies that, eh? they have their own legislation that they work under, and they don't play in the same sandpit, so...
Oh dear. We need someone to bang their heads together. So how did you two guys meet? We've got the problem solver infrastructure guy. I've got the military people persons guy. So two very different guys, compatible skills, but or not compatible skills. What I'm looking for here. You could fill each other's different strengths and weaknesses. How did you guys meet each other?
Do you want to take that one?
I'll take this one. So there's five of us all together working on this project and this business. So four of us have been friends since high school.
Mm-hmm.
All had a passion in gaming growing up. So we started Victory Up as an idea 4 years ago because we weren't getting, I guess, the level of competition we wanted to see in New Zealand happening. Sam came on the picture, was it middle of last year? Middle of last year, and we got, I actually reached out to Sam because he was doing quite a lot of community esports here in Wellington. He had his finger in the pie. He was working with the community. We knew that for the business to be successful, we needed to engage with the community and see what their needs were. Because with esports, isn't just one group of people. There's multitudes of them, all different genres of games. To say that Sam was a dickhead when I first met him, you're 100% right. I'm pretty sure Sam can say the same thing about me. So our first impressions of each other were pretty low.
For those of you listening to the podcast, I've got lots of nodding coming from Sam at this point. Before Sam came onto the scene. The other side of things is you play competitive gaming. You're playing rugby. It sounds like you're a kind of competitive kind of person, who's driven by beating other people or being good at what you do. The other three members of your team, the four of you who are mates. Were you an esports kind of, or were you a kind of a gaming team, or did you compete against each other?
No, it was a typical weekend. Go to one of the boys' house, put on Madden, put on NBA, put on the FIFA, and have a tournament. You know.
Yep.
And that was our weekends after rugby, after athletics. That's what we'd do every weekend. Walk to each other's house, pick each other up. So we got to the final destination, and
So very much down in the console. You're not setting up LAN parties and all that kind of stuff. It was very much one TV, one console. Okay, boys, 24 hours of gaming. Here we come. Beers, pizza in the corner.
Beers that the parents didn't know about, of course, taken from their cabinets. Growing up. Console gaming was the most achievable gaming for us in terms of price. We all of us didn't come from well-off families, so we were sharing a lot of our equipment to do what we wanted to do, which makes you appreciate it a lot more as you're an adult. So yeah, that was our weekly sort of activity.
But as you say, you're reminiscing now back to your teenage years.
Mm.
When you're in your 20s, and I'm going to guess here, late 20s, are you 30 yet?
Yep.
Yep. So did you still keep playing through your 20s as together, and it evolved into a bit more online, or how did you, or was it kind of, you just kept in touch, and always, yeah, whenever you got back together again, always went, if only we'd done this, we could have been that 16-year-old winning League of Legends and being a millionaire.
Well, I guess gaming was for us our first taste of social media. It was our Facebook. That's how we kept in touch with each other. We all moved to different places around the country when we were in our 20s. Mm-hmm. And we connected through gaming, online gaming. You know, much to our partner's dismay at the time, you know, we're logging on in the evening, joining the party chat and laughing for the next 4 hours, you know. But that's how our friendship stayed about, was through gaming, because there was no Facebook that was prominent at the time. I think we were still using MS Messenger in my 20s, you know, a whole bunch of other non-existent social media platforms like Bebo, MySpace, Cringe City, as I can see on Sam's face.
Can't believe we're talking about that.
Yeah. You're making me pull out my age, which is been in denial a few years now.
No, okay, look, I mean, one of the things I've read recently, I mean, social media is a big thing for me. Look, here I am trying to run basically an online radio station via social media and via podcasting. And one of the things I read about a year or so ago, which I thought found really fascinating, was people were using Fortnite as a social media platform, not as a gaming platform. And they actually log on and chat to each other as friends, not even play. And that there was this dark social is kind of one of the terms that it's called, because it's not one of the things about things like Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, is from a social media marketing point of view, everyone's tracked. You know who's talking what. We know how many people log on. We know how many messages there are. We know if you do an advert, how many people you reach. And there's a generation that is looking to avoid all that through private messaging services, which have now all been bought up by your Facebook's, Microsoft stuff, so that you're actually being tracked, or through games, actually using games as social media. So it's interesting that you guys, before that became kind of a trend with the current generation, you guys were doing the exact same thing, using games as what my generation used, our phones or wrote letters. You were using computer games, which I think is something that I think a lot of my generation just wouldn't automatically kind of get, that it's a way of, it's not just a way of entertainment, it's a way of communicating as a community as well. Sam, did you also a similar sort of thing, use gaming and use online gaming as a way to keep in touch with friends?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's actually where I met some of my best mates. I met a couple of guys playing Halo way back in 2004, where was I, university, so 2011, 2012. And we just sort of stayed friends since then. We don't meet each other at all. We just sort of keep up via Xbox. That's how we sort of do things. So it's actually really cool to be able to just jump in there and see these guys or hear these guys that I've known for so long. But I mean, I wouldn't have known them through without gaming, and I wouldn't be able to keep up with them without gaming, because that's our common interests. Mm-hmm. So that's how I've always used gaming. You know, RuneScape back in the day had the in-game chat, and you'd meet people there. I had some friends at school that we all played that together, and would level up and stuff like that. So it's got it's big in my life.
Now, so what, one of the appeals of it is this unregulated, untracked kind of side of it. One of the downsides also is the abuse that goes through that, especially for a lot of female gamers get through that. And is that something you guys have experienced and come across, is the sort of the abuse side of it on there as well? Or is that, I guess, what's the, your opinion as kind of as Victory and as about that kind of side of what's going on in gaming?
Yeah, I guess for my own personal experience in that stuff has been it's non-existent, because I've never put myself in a position where I've opened myself up to that toxicity that exists in some of these gaming communities. But that's just a resilience thing I've you know, built up myself, where I'm able to ignore that stuff. You know, I've got two young kids, or one's still a baby, but a girl that's 12 years old, and she, through gaming, she plays Fortnite. You can see how it actually impacts those that haven't really prepared themselves for this sort of mental bullying, you know. And when you're taking, I guess, a game that you're playing with your friends online, and the bullying starts there, then it starts working its way into the school system as well the next day when they're at school together. And we know of some cases where fights have broken out in school because they lost the Fortnite game the night before, you know, which is for and which is quite sad for our teachers out there, because they don't have the tools to, you know, cope with the sort of activity that's happening. The awareness is there, the parents want to do something about it, the teachers want to do something about it, but the I guess the tools aren't in place yet to help them work through that stuff.
And so it looks like you're getting involved a little bit on this side of things. You're a community advisor for Internet NZ. Now, is that the regulator, or is that the different? I got the wrong. Because there's a government agency, isn't there, that monitors online abuse, or monitors the internet, and one of their sections is about that sort of things. They came to one of my girls' schools and explained that, look, whatever filtering you put in place, you're never going to filter everything. Kids are going to get exposure to this thing, and it's about, as you say, building their personal resilience rather than trying to use a technical solution to try and block it. So is that what's your involvement in the Internet NZ piece?
Yeah, well, so Internet NZ is there to help sort of guide the direction of the internet by lobbying the government. Essentially, it sort of sits alongside NetSafe, which is probably the organisation that popped in. They really focus on those sort of areas, especially around the teens. It's very important. Like, you would have seen some of the latest ads coming out on TV. I think they're absolutely brilliant ads. They speak to almost every single generation. So Internet NZ, slightly different tact. We do a lot of the policy side of things. We do a little bit of stuff with NetSafe, but I'm not involved in that side of things, unfortunately. So the areas that we sort of look at in my team is the grants, the funding side of things. So we help fund a huge amount of internet-based research, digital inclusion programs. We also sponsor various sort of programs, events, content creators. There's a really great market out there that we want to bring to people that also help us with, you know, our goals and objectives. It's a really great place to work, actually. I've only just started working there, and there's a lot of work, but it's a fantastic place to be.
So I guess what we have here is a bit I've not actually talked about yet. Now, we'll start with Sam. So, Army.
Yeah.
Next day, you are director of, or you say you self-fund yourself to become a production guy who helps people produce e-game sort of content and pieces. How do you jump from being a basically being a guy in a uniform one day, the next day, by the looks of the of your logo, having a big blue beard with a bucket hat and glasses, and getting into a scene that is very the e-gaming scene gaming and esports, Paul, get it right. The gaming scene and the esports scene is very, well, it has come across a counterculture, anti everything that kind of Defense Force suggests. A big change for you culturally and also the type of business you did. How do you make that jump?
So I mean, the army stuff is just really the reserve unit there, based in Wellington. So I wanted to try something different. My granddad had been in the military. Both my grandparents were in the military. My granddad was an officer, so I kind of want to follow in his footsteps. And then, yeah, so sort of doing the consulting and stuff like that, that's more really what I do, as opposed to my stuff with Victory Up. That Ranga Gaya Productions was born out of when I used to stream games back in 2017-ish. And that's kind of what sat under that side of things. It also sort of helps cover off my podcast that I do at the moment with a couple of other guys, which is just, called Gamers Uncensored. And we just talk about games and stuff. So that sits under Ranga Gaya Productions as well. It's just a big umbrella thing, really, for all of my little projects on the side that I try and do when I'm not engaging with the Victory Up stakeholders.
So okay, then that's the so how do you get from being Emery, you and three mates from school? How did the four of you decide suddenly, you know what, guys, we're not I don't know what jobs they have, but I'm not going to be in logistics anymore. I'm going to jump over and set up an esports company. Which again is a massive jump from being all the jobs you've done up until that point, from what I can tell, are all you're working for somebody, and suddenly you're becoming an entrepreneur, you're working for yourself, or you're working for as a group, you're working for yourselves. You've gone from things that are physical and hard to things that are virtual and fun. Again, how did you make that jump? What was the catalyst for that?
Jeez, what was the catalyst for that? that's a very good question.
Four goals and losing at Madden, and someone say my forfeit is.
I guess for myself personally, and I can't speak for the other team members, but for me it was, I guess like you identified before, I like finding solutions, and there was a need for a solution in the esports area. And it started as an idea, and it was an idea over while we were playing the game. A competitor, or I guess an organization at the time, came out with the idea, and we thought, okay, sweet, someone's here to do it. And the execution, in our opinion, was poor. So we said, okay, let's just reboot this. Let's see what we can do with it. Let's do some investigation, give us a good excuse to get together during the week without our partners, have some beers, and talk about games, and a whole lot of other stuff. And that's where it really started, was just seeing a need in the market, seeing a need for growth. And I guess the main thing for us was seeing there was a huge gap in acceptance, and something that's happening every day, day-to-day lives of our kids and our adults, but still not widely accepted. If you look at my childhood, sports was it, and gaming was our hobby. You're starting to see the trend now where gaming is their main concentration in their life, and sports is becoming the hobby, if sports even exist. And we don't want to see sports die, because that was our generation. We were brought up with that. So if we can put a hand in there to say, actually, we can create the well-needed balance between this physical and digital world, then let's do something about it.
Okay. It's not the four of you trying to put together a sports team, an esports team. It's something else. What's the elevator pitch? What is Victory Up?
Victory Up's an esports infrastructure company. We're here to build that infrastructure, build that foundation on the direction of where esports should be going in New Zealand, and that's what we're about.
So what infrastructure? So, as one of the things that I've kind of mentioned, and we've said is that people can do it from their bedrooms. So, what infrastructure is needed for esports in this country?
I think to start with, it's awareness and our schooling. We have a lot of kids that play it for many hours a night when they get home. As a parent myself, I was guilty of this. It was easy to distract the kids with while you were doing something else. Here's the iPad. Here's the PlayStation. I'm going to go cook tea. It's led into something very unhealthy in some households where that just becomes the norm. Get home after school. Instead of doing your homework, you're straight on the game. And you're on that game in your room behind a closed door where my parents can't see me for 5-6 hours. Then you're going to school the next day and you're tired. You're not concentrating. You go home and you do the same routine. Close the door, turn the game on. We're back into it. And I guess when we were kids growing up with sports, you got that break from technology. You got home, you might switch on the telly and Pokemon's on or Gargoyles. But then, half an hour later, I've got to shoot down the road because I've got rugby training. And I guess it's that awareness that we have no tools in place right now to create a balance between this physical and digital world. And a lot of companies out there now are pushing the digital. Digital's the future. You can't have digital without the physical. There needs to be a balance, and that's what we want to do.
Okay, so you're talking about building out the infrastructure for esports. Being what you are, and then the first thing you tell me is we want to get people doing physical things. It's interesting there are you putting together sort of training for teachers, training for parents? What are you doing in that kind of balancing space then?
So for us, I guess our first break into the schools was through the sport governing body here in Wellington, College Sport Wellington, that look after secondary school sports. So we approached them around holding an esports competition within the schools and offering it to them down here. From that, we got the sort of, we're interested. So we did our work and, what's going to be the best fit for a game to launch into this? And funny enough, it was League of Legends. Most people don't agree that because it's a MOBA and you kill the opposition, you destroy their base. Don't feel that sometimes it fits within that school system, but the sportsmanship, the teamwork that comes with a game of that type is sports in itself. The strategizing that these people have to do. So Riot Games, Oceania have developed a program called Learn with Leagues, and I've taken aspects of sports and turned them into teacher resources. So you can teach sportsmanship, you can teach teamwork, you can teach balance in between screen time and non-screen time. So we work with Riot Games to utilize their already existing resources they've created, and then we went away and said, everyone calls it a sport. Let's treat it like a sport. And how do we treat it like a sport? We implement some physical side to it, some health and wellbeing. So we went away and developed some health and wellbeing resources, nutrition, sleep, physical activity, which, Sports New Zealand push active recreation. It's no longer physical activity. It's as long as I'm moving. As long as I'm doing something, And so that's what we concentrated on, was how do we integrate these health aspects into a sport that's digital. And it can be done in many ways. And so what we push is that instead of just, you know, if we're going to treat it like a sport, the expectation is you're going to do 2 days of training a week, you know, an hour minimum. But one of those days shouldn't be just on-screen training. It should be some off-screen training where we talk about nutrition. What am I eating? How is this going to help me perform better as an e-sport athlete? And that's the type of infrastructure we're trying to build. Is, you know, there is some there's good balance around the physical and digital, which I keep referring back to. Yeah, but that it doesn't exist currently. No one's doing it. It's the digital side. How do we make money?
Now, Riot Games from I believe are now recognised as a sports body by New Zealand Sports, and so that's why we can now gamble on esports.
So New Zealand, so the New Zealand Esports Federation has been given the NSO under Sports New Zealand, so they're now the official governing body. So by them sitting with under Sport New Zealand, made esports an official sport here in New Zealand. We know most other countries, esports is still considered a game.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So some of the things you're doing there or sound similar to what a guy called Jamie Tout is doing, and they're setting up a sports hub. You guys know him already?
Yeah.
You could tell the story, Sam.
So we reached out to Jamie a couple of months ago now, and he was really keen on sort of, I mean, after we connected and chatted, we talked a little bit more about a couple of different areas that would sort of help in Wellington around esports, and he's very open to it. So it was quite an easy conversation with him. His stakeholders are very interested in what we're doing around esports, around events, around high performance. It's going to be a very interesting relationship what we have with him. He's a great guy. I'm really looking forward to working with him and seeing what we can do for esports in New Zealand. Essentially, it's going to be huge. We're going to be a big player on the world stage in producing some of the best athletes in the world.
And so, folks, if you haven't listened already, I had an interview with Jamie about a week or 2 weeks ago now, and he is the Sports Performance Director for the New Zealand Campus of Innovation and Sport. And what they're doing there is looking at using sports and then saying, okay, how do we teach, how do we put the educational pieces around that? So how do kids learn about maths by how you score in sport? How do kids learn about nutrition or biology through the nutrition and the impacts of sport? And how do we use sport to include within the curriculum? And it's, which sounds very similar to what you're trying to do and on a similar sort of line, except using esports again. It's obvious how it fits in with things like maths. Okay, boys, we've got to. We've got to score 100 points, getting the bases 60, killing each character's 20. What's the best combination we need to get there? Those sort of things. My health is this. I know that they damage X, Y, Z. Therefore, I'm better off approaching this this way against this opponent than that opponent. And I use maths to decide which way to go because at the end of the day, it's all algorithms. It does sound like I'm glad you guys are talking to each other because it does sound like you're doing similar things from a slightly different direction, but with a lot of overlap though. So it sounds like some ways you guys are a kind of a tournament organizer as well as the sort of teaching piece. So. And you're talking about, and one of the things we mentioned before was about pathways. So how do you see your tournament or what you're doing with the schools as that pathway to, say, a professional team within Riot Games?
Do you want to answer this?
In terms of pathways, the how we sort of start things out with any sport is with the schools. So we talked a bit about that already, but starting out with the secondary schools where it's age appropriate for these games. So you've got League of Legends, you've also got kind of FIFA, NBA, Rocket League, couple of games there that are really appropriate and good for teaching kids teamwork, stuff like that. Then moving up to the next stage of the path is university. So it's not quite professional here. It's still that grassroots area where the tournament, the players aren't, they're not getting paid. They might be starting to realize that they're actually quite good at the game and that they can go professional sort of after university, or maybe they can do it during university, but they've still got the university competitions there. So that's where you can start including some slightly different games. So you've also got Counter-Strike Global Offensive or Valorant, which are some of the big games out there, but they're not quite in that school area because they are shooters. You're still also going with League of Legends and Rocket League, the traditional ones still. So we're not discarding those at any stage of this. And then finally, after university, you've got, you know, semi-pro, pro, casual tournaments. There's a whole area. It opens up after university. So with casual tournaments, that's the sort of thing that we host on our platform. One-offs, maybe, you know, a casual league and Rocket League, something like that. In terms of more competitive side of things, you've got leagues that we can hold. So, you know, working with different stakeholders, maybe Football New Zealand to hold a FIFA league for over 20s to find the best FIFA sort of player. That's getting into the region of competitive, but not quite semi-pro or pro. Semi-pro and pro, you've got a whole bunch of different leagues which are happening. So Riot Games host the OPL, which is considered a professional league in Australia and New Zealand. And that's the kind of thing that we need to aim for in New Zealand, not just across Australia and New Zealand.
So I had a chat with the owner of Gravitas, a team in the OPL. So yes, so folks, again, if you want to know more about that, go back and watch and listen to the interview with I've forgotten his first name. Callahan is his second name. Oh, I've gone blank. Are you talking with have you made awareness amongst the those professional teams? Do they know who you are, and that you kind of say, hey, folks, here are some university leagues we run where you might discover athletes, or are you running university leagues at the moment? Is that what you've you're saying you need them, but
We do have something that we've just sort of put out recently, which is working with University and Tertiary Sport New Zealand, and that is around a FIFA league and also a League of Legends league. So that's going to include all higher education sort of facilities providers in New Zealand. And that's going to be working towards that university stage. So we've got the school stage moving forward really nicely. What we're going to do with UTSNZ is start working on that side of things with them and also start providing the educational benefits as well. So we will be looking into the educational pieces, what we can do at university, because, you know, this sort of stuff is actually already happening over in places like the US and the UK. So I don't see why not, you know, why can't this be happening in New Zealand? And that's that starting stage. So right now, we've got that sort of relationship building with them now, and we're looking forward to seeing where the university stuff kind of goes. It's going to be pretty exciting, especially if we can get all of the universities and tertiary providers sort of entering teams into this, because there's no barriers to entry, right? The game's free. you need a decent computer, but I mean, from our school league, we know that someone runs it on an iPad, strangely enough. But yeah, so it's got a massively low barrier to entry. I don't see why we can't get a huge number of people in universities and tertiary providers entered into these competitions and then help them sort of with their traditional, well, what some people see as a hobby, and actually show them that there is more to it than what they think.
So that name I missed, I couldn't get it. Sean Callan is the first. Yes. So, Coke, if you want to see that interview, search for that. So we're starting to get the pieces there, because initially when I was talking to saw you guys, your profiles all say it's all Wellington based, but it sounds now like that that the university piece is national. Is the school piece national, or is that still just Wellington?
At the moment, it's still just Wellington. Mm-hmm. There are plans to take that national. We're in the process of discussing this now with the stakeholders. So we'll have an update in a few months, hopefully, on what that's going to look like in 2021.
So, folks, look out for the secondary schools official tournament alongside volleyball and netball and bowls and all of those sort of sports. So look, it looks like it's heading in the right direction there. Now, one of the things I'm aware of is that talking to some people, they're like, look, you can't play certain games from home because of the lag and real time. You do actually need venues for some of these tournaments, which is why in the OCS, sorry, I've gone blank again now, the Gravitas take part in, they all go to Sydney and compete in the actual for the actual games, and they travel home to wherever they wherever their base is to train. I know that here in Waikato, there is the university has got a gaming, what do you call it? I don't know, actually, no, venue. What's the right word for a
Is it the Omen Arena?
Could be. I don't know what it's called, to be honest. But okay. So, yeah. So you call them arenas, do you? Where? Or what? I know. If you want to go watch a rugby game, I go watch it in a stadium. On a pitch. Where do you host an esports game?
Anywhere.
Competition.
This is that sort of low barrier again. So, I mean, the guys at Waikato call it an arena, mm-hmm. But, I mean, it depends on your interpretation of it. So, I mean, arena kind of – when I think of an arena, I think of in Wellington, the TSB arena on the waterfront, which is sort of a couple of thousand people, that sort of thing. I mean, their one's slightly smaller. You know, it only houses a certain amount of computers and stuff like that. But I think that's still, you know – that's a place where people gather, and it is an arena, you know. Yeah. That's where they hold tournaments, and they cast some of their games, which is great to see. And, we can call it whatever we want. It can be an arena. It can be a stadium. It can be an MMA fighting arena. It's super open at the moment. There's just no limits.
So how many arenas do we have in New Zealand like that that are dedicated venues where that can host these sorts of tournaments?
I mean, a lot of facilities are multi-purpose. Right. So TSB Arena would be able to be fitted out. It's not dedicated. The only dedicated one I know of is up in Auckland, which actually has seating for an audience, and that is out of Sky City. Is that right, Henry?
Yeah. Let's play in live venue.
But the one in Hamilton, I think, those computers are permanently set up, aren't they? It's not like it gets ripped down and rebuilt all the time. So there are ones that might not have seating, but they have got they're permanently there to host. Is that right?
Or am I wrong? Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, definitely. So Sky City, we definitely know that would call that a permanent venue. For Let's Play Live. You definitely say that Waikato University's gaming arena is a permanent venue.
Yep.
Because that's what it's dedicated for. We, in terms of other dedicated venues, I guess you could say any internet cafe in New Zealand is a dedicated venue, no matter where they are, because that's what they're designed to be there for, gaming.
Okay, so when you host your one in your school one down in Wellington, it's a bespoke fit out that gets fitted out and then teared down afterwards.
Yep. So we bring the equipment, we set up in a location, and we take it away. The hope is in the coming term is that we have not the same location every week, but we have a land location that I guess parents and supporters can come and support the teams. Mm. Yeah.
So you're looking at projectors or big screens so they can actually watch what's happening. The ones I've seen are, well, you have a banquet. It's a bit like a lecture theatre in some ways, and then you have the two teams down the front with a big screen behind them that everyone can watch see
what's happening.
See what's happening. Now that obviously works if you've got a tournament where you have two teams that people look at, but if you've got a weekend tournament where you've got 50 games happening at once, and you knock it down because you can't, rather than sort of doing a league over several months, then I guess it's a bit different there that you don't have all the big screens of all the games on show. But so do you do the weekend tournaments or are you trying to do long term ones?
I guess we're pretty much trying to put our finger in everything. Mm-hmm. If you talk about a weekend tournament, it automatically reminds me of NFL Red Zone. How many games do we have playing at the same time? You know, when they're playing NFL, and you've got to select which game you're going to watch. Otherwise, you've got a screen there that's got five different games, and you're looking in this small little screen going, right, there's the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, you know, it's weekend tournaments. When you talk about, I guess, broadcasting, and this is the beauty of esports, is that it gives everyone an opportunity to put their own brand out there. We would definitely highlight certain games in a weekend tournament and say, you know, these are the ones to watch for. But there's nothing stopping the participants from going to do their own broadcasting, saying, come watch me, I'm playing in this. And why would we stifle that? Because that's just growth for the industry.
So a couple of things. Obviously, when you're talking about the real life sports, you have umpires and referees. Do you need that as part of, or does the game, do the games sort of enforce all the kind of rules for you? Or do you have people walking around in striped black and white jerseys looking over people's shoulders?
Well, that's the dream, eh? Put on the black and white. it's quite lucky, actually. Like, you definitely do need officials, mm-hmm. Just like any other sport. The beauty with games is there's a lot of built-in mechanics that, I guess, stop the cheating from happening. And the cheats that can be exploited is what you need your officials there for. So every game needs to be monitored. Every game needs to be accessed by an official. So that's, you know, and it's a whole nother career pathway that's available is officiating. And it's something we still don't have here. You know, we have to go from an international standard at the moment. So if we want officials in New Zealand to, say, host an OPL, if we were to do League of Legends in New Zealand, it would need an international referee to come in and do that.
Okay, so that's another area that needs to be built out. And I guess the other thing that we have come across in Rocket League. So Rocket League, for those who don't know, is basically car football. I think it's a basic way of describing it. A couple of months ago, I think it was now, somebody got banned for, I think it was a year, wasn't it, for basically deciding to give up drawing a game, or fix a game, or throw a game. As it becomes more professional, as we were talking about at the time, what can go wrong? You've got a whole bunch of hormonal teenagers getting paid thousands of dollars to play sports. I can't imagine anyone would ever throw their toys out of the pram. Is that an area that also you need to educate the athletes in?
Yeah, it's definitely. You know, esports in New Zealand's in its infancy. It's something that will continue to grow for the next 5-10 years, and there'll be a lot of changes within this industry. That example of the Rocket League just showed the, I guess it was the lack of awareness around how, you know, the Esports Federation had only just been given that title officially. And so who knows, this stuff might have been happening well before they got put in place. And because there was now a governing body that it got highlighted, you know, and these are still some teenagers, like you say. If you're treating it like a pro sport and you're paying them to be a part of something, but the repercussions of doing something wrong are non-existent, then there's nothing for me to worry about. You know, why wouldn't I go and throw a game if I'm going to make some extra money on the side? With the Esports Federation being there, sort of everyone sort of went, holy moly, it's for real. I can be held responsible.
And just so clear, the example that we're talking about, match fixing wasn't, or as far as I'm aware, match fixing wasn't, money involved wasn't actually alleged in that situation. There has been another situation in Australia where there was match fixing involved, and again, those first people also got banned as well. So, yeah, it's, as you say, it's a maturing thing. Things will go wrong. And the other thing that's quite a lot of that apparently goes on is that teams will earn, or a lot of players or athletes, sorry, will earn more streaming than they will if they finish third or fourth. And so they will actually just forfeit the third, fourth playoff to go home because they can earn more money streaming than they can sticking around for that last game. So again, that's another area where it needs to mature if you're going to have a bronze final. Sorry?
And I guess with it being a sport in New Zealand, it kind of changes the whole face of that. You know, you have your, we take All Blacks for instance, and an All Black can be promoted as an All Black, but when it's a South brand, they're no longer an All Black. They're that player. And I think we'll start seeing that in esports as well in the coming years, is that they have their own independent brand, and then they have the brand that they're representing full time. And that's where we'll start seeing the growth around these sort of, I guess, minor issues that are appearing now, because they are minor because they're not happening often enough. We don't have the pro stage like we think, like we should do. You know, we don't have the Super Rugby competition level of esports currently in New Zealand. And I think once we get to that stage, the industry would have grown enough. There'd be enough organizations around to actually protect those players in those positions.
I agree with you on most of the points. I think, I guess, the one area I would suggest that does need to be looked at and monitored very closely is around the match fixing side. There are people gambling on these games now. And that's so hence there is, we've seen the issues that's caused in cricket, where match fixing goes back to, well, W.G. Grace, we're talking hundreds of years ago. So, I mean, that's it's always been involved. But yeah, you've got to be careful that you don't. That to me is one area. The other areas are people throwing their toys out of the pram and saying, I've had enough and walking out and not completing a game. Yeah, that can be, as long as it's not match fixing and people say, the gambling inside. That's a minor thing that will get sorted out through maturity, but the gambling one, I think,
especially now that the TAB is doing esports, you know, it changes the whole ball game.
It doesn't, but it also means that there is now a viable income to fund esports, because the TAB gives money back to the sports that have been bet on. And we've seen that's been a problem for tennis, for example, where half their funding has disappeared overnight because Grand Slams aren't happening. But it does also mean that now there is a viable income stream to help build out the industry as well.
Yeah.
So guys, start applying for that, folks. any bits I haven't covered on that Victory Up are getting up to that they're involved in, or have we covered most of the bases?
Poor. Trying to think now, everything that we're doing. yeah, to be honest, everything that we're doing, we're just trying to work within the system at the moment to be able to create the infrastructure, like Henry was saying, for the future. So it's working from the ground up with the people that are already here, especially at the top. So the Esports Federation, LPL, the UTS NZ, college sport facilities and organisers, just to be able to build this up into something that is meaningful and productive in New Zealand.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time, boys. Just remind us what that podcast was if you want to listen to more about esports and keep up to date on it. Keep up to date with it. That you do.
Oh, my one. Yeah. Oh, wow. It's called Gamers Uncensored, and it's pretty much everything gaming related. We're on all available platforms, aka just Spotify at the moment, but I'm sure we can do something else in the future.
Cool. Thank you very much, Sam and Henry. Don't forget, folks, to like our Facebook page, also that you can listen to New Zealand Sports Radio on the go. Just search for New Zealand Sports Radio on your favourite podcatchers, be that Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Acast, or etc. We're in all of those wonderful places. Thank you very much, boys, and good luck with the future.
Thank you, Paul.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.